this? Hi.
Remember, it all evens out. Nobody knows how loud it is.
Nobody knows my pain.
Play through your pain.
Nobody knows the tinnitus that I'm getting. Hello, Tim. How are you? I'm okay.
I only realize I'm deaf when I borrow other people's cell phones,
yeah,
and I can barely hear anything
what?
On them.
Yeah, and you're having to, like, crank everything up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, I know that you don't see yourself being in radio when you're, like, 50.
Oh, you will be.
Yeah, but you will be. Chain smoking behind the microphone, wishing you were dead. And you'll be deaf. And here's how you'll know that is, because some young ruffian, what'd you say earlier, some young buck will come in, and they will be coming in. This is like some fictional, this is some fantasy world where there's still live announcers. And he will come in to do the shift after yours. You'll be unplugging your crap. He'll plug his headphones in, and he'll be all like, whoa, somebody's deaf. Because your headphones will be cranked all the way up. Just like that's how it is when Clyde does any of his production. It's just where it just rattles the windows of that soundproof room. Rick, you should know that Talk Like a Pirate Day was started by a guy in Portland. His name is John Bauer. He and his family were featured on Wife Swap, on ABC's Wife Swap that premiered last night. Really? This Wife Swap's got a Portland couple? I don't watch that, but Lara does. Well, whatever. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, let's now begin the real reason you're here today at the Ministry of Truth. It is Tim Riley.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Now, the big brouhaha for the media here in town is that teenager fatally shot by police who was clearly out of control. He is a recent Tigard High School graduate fatally shot by police over the weekend after his mother called 911. A review of the tape indicates that Luke Glenn, who's 18, was out of control, smashed car windows, was highly intoxicated, had a knife, and he was...
Is he on the drugs?
It doesn't say here.
All right.
Apparently he had some drinking before that, and he had a broken relationship. And he was killed by deputies. First, they fired non-lethal beanbags at him, but he refused to drop the knife he was carrying, holding it through his throat, and was heading into his parents' home. Authorities fear for the safety of the home's occupants.
See?
And fired.
That's exactly what this is what I was talking about with Lisa Goddard. Guy's holding a weapon, and he's walking anywhere toward my house. You shoot him repeatedly until he is dead.
Well, here's the outrage. Well, the outrage, apparently. You know what the big outrage is here?
No.
If this was not included... He had been a football player at Tigard High School, and because their lives should be spared above all others.
Well, that makes...
And that they're white and have smiles in their...
And he is blonde, and his photo does have him wearing his varsity jacket.
Oh,
no, police,
boy.
It's a real tragedy now.
No, police should have thought...
Of course.
...that a high school athlete's life is more valuable than those who do not play athletics.
That's totally...
And should have been spared, regardless of how dangerous he was to the public.
That's totally what it is. He's an athlete. How dangerous could he really be?
Doesn't he have crazy eyes? Look at that picture.
Yes.
But because he was an athlete, he's a finer human being than those who aren't.
Yes, think of all the girls in college. We're going to miss out on unwanted gropings because of this. All right. Well, there you go. Well, that's okay. I guess so.
So all you outraged female reporters out there who are starting all this.
It's seriously. That's... And you're exactly right. They get you, and you can totally tell, by the way, how they want to paint a story by the picture they use. The Inquirer is the best example of this. We're looking at a picture of Whitney Houston sneezing. Mm-hmm. And, like, sneezing with, like, one eye closed and sort of a... Sort of a crazy look. And when they take the picture of this kid, and you're right, when he's got the nutty eyes, he does have the whole, do you have a roll of duct tape around here? Look on his face.
If that kid's going into his parents' house with a knife and
seriously,
he's uncontrollable, my friend's brother killed his parents because of that. Like, I'm
was
glad
he a high school athlete?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Well, then he doesn't matter.
They usually have the best drugs.
Yes. They really do. Can I just tell you this? Can I say something that no one wants to say?
Even back in the 70s, it was true.
Back in the 80s, it was true, too. That if... See, it's all of this, all of the class issues just come to the surface. It's just the slightest bit of
parents, are you listening? You remember. You're in denial, but it is true.
And that's the thing is, and you remember incorrectly. That's the thing. Parents, they do this retconning of their own history, where parents sort of whitewash things in their memory retrospectively.
Well, after they have a child, all of a sudden their childhood was like on Happy Days.
Exactly.
Father knows best. Anything in black and white.
I got to tell you, man, when I went to school, and I've talked about this before, and it sounds like a joke. This sounds like a thing that you would sort of fabricate. This sounds like a thing that would be in a movie. And I was probably the same at y'all's school with different names. But at my high school, there were two parking lots. There was actually three. There was a common lot, which there was no name for, but there were two large, distinct parking lots. And it is very telling of the times and of how ingrained the social thing is that they actually, even the teachers called it this. There were two parking lots. One was right by the it was right by the football field and the sort of like the gymnasium, you know, the building where all the athletes and the jocks had their lockers. And then there was one that was by like the vocational center, you know, and like the wood shop class where all like the F-ups were. And there were two parking lots, and the parking lots were called by everybody jock lot and stoner lot, which is a thing that
back
you think
in my
about
day
now,
they were called heads.
Yeah, that heads, and it's if you think about it, it's crazy because even the teachers use those phrases, which I don't think you could ever be allowed to do now. Teachers would be like, "Well, where's so and so? Well, he's probably out in stoner lot, or you know, or where's my car? Well, I parked at my jock lot," and it's like you would never be allowed to say that now because it would be this seen as fostering.
Athletes are your leaders. The rest of you are their followers.
And that's what I'm saying, is that when they called it stoner lot, and the drug that I saw used the most in the, the place we called stoner lot in my high school was tobacco. They were all off, you know, they were smoking, you know, cigarettes and whatnot. But I got to tell you, when I went to school, if you needed serious drugs, you went to the football players. It was the same, and I'll guarantee you that's exactly the same way
it is
now.
And if they were caught, the faculty would turn their back to the problem.
Oh, absolutely.
And go after the stoner kids.
No, absolutely. Well, and
not that they're any better.
No, because look, I mean, I think we all also know that there are two kinds of social structures at work there. The kids in jock lot are more likely to come from affluent backgrounds and houses and homes. We all know this to be true. The kids who are off, you know, the kid who's driving a primer gray Camaro that has one speaker in the back that's playing a Molly Hatchet song probably comes from a different economic background. And as such, is easier to kick out and pick on because his parents are less likely to have any serious recourse. So clearly, that is, you're exactly right about this. The mitigating factor is that there's a photograph of him somewhere with a Colgate smile wearing a varsity jacket. So, and he probably was a big fan of Jesus as well. So there you go.
Regardless of how dangerous he was, because he was a high school athlete,
yes,
people should have been more lenient.
So he was out of control, smashing car windows, was highly intoxicated. Mm-hmm. This is according to the police, by the way.
Yeah.
Had a knife, and listen to this, and quote said, he was not going down without killing someone.
Oh, my God.
Okay. He's dead, and we are better for it. I'm going to tell you that right now, and you may lie to yourself and deny that it's the case. What is his name? What was his name?
It's under the picture.
Luke Glenn. Luke Glenn. Dead. 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 Will be missed by none of us. So there
all
you
the
go.
White Housewives in Beaverton will.
All right.
There.
Seriously. And yet, that guy, though, in the Congress, was running through Congress with a gun and crack yesterday. And they do nothing.
God. All right, so there you go. All right.
And how awkward is it for the parents knowing that he was running into the house to basically try and kill them, and now they're planning his funeral and
everything? Seriously, that's got to feel good.
Now they're going to try to blame the police.
Additional counselors were on hand at the school Monday.
For what?
I honestly have no idea. I really don't know the answer to remind you that there's like a 1 in 3 chance that the guy who sits next to you is a psychopath on some level, I would imagine. Man, there was a kid, and this is, we're getting a little off the subject. There was a kid in my driver's ed class, and he was in my driver's ed class after this happened. So it's not like I knew him and then it happened. But what's more unnerving is that he sent back to school after this, where he dropped a bunch of, he didn't kill her, but he dropped a bunch of acid and attacked his mom with a machete. And it's, you know, and he was, and they had to point out a million times so that he was listening to Pink Floyd while he did it, too, because somehow that was apparently the instigating factor in their heads. But he dropped a bunch of acid and listened to, like, The Wall or something, some Pink Floyd record, and then went after his mom with a machete, which he just had lying around the house, you know, like you do. And so he didn't kill her, and then she forgave him, and then they all found God together. And then they sat him right next to me in driver's ed. That's a good feeling. Hey, you're going to sit, his name was Gary, I won't give his last name. Hey, you're going to sit next to Gary. And it's that thing of sitting there and look at him going, why does his face look so familiar? And then you realize it's because you've seen it leering out at you from the crime pages of the newspaper after cutting up his mom with a big knife. That's a good feeling. All right, there you go. So there you go. Luke Glenn, dead. And rightfully so. All right.
So there.
Okay. It's 503-733-2970. Here's Tim Riley.
Let's do the Bushwatch.
Here's your Bushwatch for Tuesday.
Kind of in charge. He's got the whole country saying, that's my bush. La, Sometimes it's hard at the price of fame. When you're president, everyone knows your name. Hey, what's that thing? It's my verse. I can't believe he's actually in the White House. That's our murder. That's my verse.
This is a bigger than usual Bushwatch because he's very, very busy today on certain fronts. First, amid falling gas prices, I think they dropped about 10 cents or so, and a two-week drive to highlight his administration's effort to fight terrorism, the president's approval rating has risen to 44%, according to a new USA Today Gallup poll.
That's the highest it's been in like a year.
Highest
and a half.
In a year.
Yeah.
The poll also showed likely voters evenly divided between Democratic and Republican candidates for Congress, 48% to 48% among registered voters. Democrats had a 51% to 42% advantage. The results come 7 weeks before closely contested elections for control of Congress.
I don't understand at this point how the elections can... I realize I'm preaching to the choir. How the elections can possibly be closely contested. I can't... Really, this doesn't even...
They're trying to prepare you for what's going to happen.
Is this a test balloon? Is this some sort of... Is this so I won't be shocked
because
with the Republicans?
Because it's getting closer and closer and closer.
Yeah, so that I won't be stunned when somehow miraculously the Republicans maintain control of everything?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I just... It has... And everybody...
And then gas prices will go down, so everybody will forget.
And you know, Stephanie Miller was pointing this out this morning, actually, that, you know, it is to no one's surprise that the two guys in the White House... And look, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but that the two oil guys in the White House are suddenly able to... I mean, I'm just saying, under their watch, that the price of gas continuously goes up until right before the election when it mysteriously goes down. By the way, Pat Buchanan was on Stephanie Miller this morning. She noted exactly the same thing that we've noted. What kind of goddamn crazy world is it when Pat Buchanan is the voice of reason to liberals? Because we've been talking about Pat Buchanan for the longest time.
When we started the show, he was the crazy man.
Seriously. It really is like... this isn't a secret. He's talking about this publicly, but our friend Fatboy at KUFO, he was talking about, I mean, he's a, as he himself says, he's a person of size. He's a person of...
He's not big.
Well, but see, this is his point. He was saying that people always come up to him and they go, "You're not fat, Fatboy." And he noted that in his own estimation, he is, he is a somewhat portly fellow, not morbidly obese.
Yeah, no, not at all.
But he was noting that he believes that that's really because Americans have just all gotten so huge that now a guy who, and he gave his actual stats, I forget what it was, he's like 5'6 and 230 or something, just whatever. But he's like, Americans have just now gotten so mammoth that now he no longer qualifies as being fat at all. And that's the thing with Pat Buchanan, he no longer qualifies being crazy because the neocons have just made him look like the voice of calm rationality. So, but he was on Stephanie Miller this morning. He was on the celebrity hotline. I think we've got it on tape, though. This is so great. Is this the New York Times?
No, that's USA Today.
USA Today. Mm-hmm. So Pat Buchanan's new book, State of Emergency. This is why Pat Buchanan is great. Just in a huge, like, 80-point type. We have been invaded! And then in bold letters all the way through this, illegal aliens, criminal, disease, economic treason. Oh, God. The Bush administration is engaging in economic treason against American workers, particularly the poor and African Americans, by refusing to enforce the law and secure our borders. So there you go. And the subtitle of this book is The Third World Invasion and Conquest of America. God love him.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I bet we could get Pat Buchanan on. At this point, probably could. He's got a book to shill.
Yep.
All right. Excellent. Scotty J., we need Pat Buchanan on this program.
Immediately.
Stat.
All right. There you go. In a speech before the UN General Assembly, the president said today the world is still facing threats from terrorism, but in many areas, they're enjoying freedom that they didn't enjoy before.
Where?
In the Middle East.
No, but where?
Where?
Somewhere, presumably.
He just said, such as in the Middle East. Bush said Iraq was ruled by dictator Saddam Hussein, but now Iraq has a democratic government.
Now Iraq's seat is held by a democratic government that embodies the aspirations of the Iraq people. With these changes, more than 50 million people have been given a voice in this chamber for the first time in decades.
But outside the chamber, people are dying like flies.
Seriously, the democracy in Iraq is about the size of a phone booth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Iran must abandon nuclear weapons. That's the message that the president gave to the United Nations today. Because Iranians want to live their lives in peace.
On that terrible day, extremists killed nearly 3,000 innocent people, including citizens of dozens of nations represented right here in this...
Okay. Now, this is a speech about Iran?
Yes.
Okay, so of course, makes absolute sense that he would be talking about 9/11. Why wouldn't he?
On that terrible day, extremists killed nearly 3,000 innocent people.
Do you get the feeling you could ask him about hot dogs,
citizens,
and he'd start talking about 9/11?
Represented right here in this chamber.
Yeah.
Since then, the enemies of humanity have continued their campaign of murder.
Bush said to those in the Middle East that extremists are wrongfully claiming the U.S. is waging a war against Islam. It's not true.
You have been fed propaganda and conspiracy theories that blame others for your country's shortcomings. And everywhere...
Who is he talking to?
The U.N.
No, but what country is he addressing with this? I'm not being I don't
but
understand.
The entire assembly.
You have been fed propaganda and conspiracy theories that blame others for your country's shortcomings. And everywhere you turn, you hear extremists who tell you that you can escape your misery and regain your dignity through violence and terror and martyrdom.
He thinks they all watch the Fox News channel.
Okay, yeah, whatever. Chris, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, I just wanted to give you a relatable on that jock watch about the jock who killed everyone.
Let me ask you this. Oh, it should have been a jock watch. Sarah, can we just retro... Hold this. Let me play this here. Fantastic. And let me ask you this, by the way, before you give us the relatable, because this is, I kind of heard this story because it happened. When did it happen?
It happened over the weekend.
Over the weekend. So it was sort of, as they say, out of the news cycle by the time we got in here. But I mean, I'm really only seeing the aftermath of the story about this, this tiger at high school, this Luke Glenn guy who, again, had a knife and said he was, quote, not going down without killing somebody, and then who then was rightfully shot and killed by the police. We ought to have a new segment of the show called People Who Needed Killing. And so he would be the inaugural edition. Wait, was there really some sort of controversy about whether he needed killing? Was that a matter of debate at some point over the weekend?
It's being debated by these news reporters in the field.
Just talking amongst themselves.
This wouldn't happen in Northeast.
No, because in Northeast... No, it would not, Tim. I'm sorry, Chris, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you were talking about the jocks and the two lots. One of my best friends and future brother-in-law was kicked out of school for smoking a cigarette in the parking lot.
Of course.
While the captain of the football team was suspended for one football game for selling marijuana in the other parking lot.
Oh, dude, I get the single biggest dealer of cocaine at my high school. I won't say specifically who he was, but he did occupy a position of some stature in the athletic department and on the football team. And I know that this sounds like a 33-year-old guy still bitching about his high school crap, but you know what? It has less to do with that and more to do with the fact that that's sort of emblematic of the entire way that certain sections of society are set up. And plus, because I'll guarantee you could walk into any high school in Portland, any high school in the United States right now, and that social structure is exactly the same.
These are heroes. You are the followers.
It is entirely unchanged. And they all grow up to have 15 kids and vote Republican. They have lots of kids and they vote a lot. And then they shop at Walmart. So, all right. Thank you, sir.
All right, thanks.
All right, there you go. Yes, had held up a knife. Refused to drop the knife after being shot by beanbags. And those beanbags are bone-breaking things. I mean, I've seen those shot at sort of like test dummies. I mean, those will hurt you. He refused to drop the knife, picked up the knife again, headed for his parents' home, said he wasn't going down without some killing. Yes, yes, I can see why we would agonize over the loss of this fine young man. All right. There you go. Hey, here's Tim Riley.
Meanwhile, the power of literacy can change societies. The president took that message to a special conference on global literacy in New York. Number four.
This world must confront the pandemic of HIV/AIDS and believe that to whom much is given, much is required in order to solve disease and poverty. A lot of it brought about because a lot of the poverty brought about because of illiteracy.
It's just too easy. It's just, no, I can't. It's just, it would be.
How do you connect all those dots?
It would just be beneath me. Do we want to do the next one here? And then I got.
Bush says literacy will help stop the terrorist message.
The goals of this country are to spread liberty. The goals of this country is to enhance prosperity and peace.
Really?
You can't have prosperity
unless people can read.
Did he really? Did he really just say the goals of this country is?
Yes. Play it again.
The goals of this country is literacy.
The goals of this country are to spread liberty.
He says it in a second.
The goals of this country is to enhance prosperity and peace. You can't have prosperity unless people can read.
Okay. People knowing how to read. Literacy is the goals of this country. Okay, I'll tell you what. I'm going to play a little something special here. We'll take a break. I was going to save this for something. I was going to save this for maybe some sort of a national occasion, but George Bush speaking about literacy seems occasion enough. Do a little thing here. We'll come back. Bottom of the hour, we got the Gary Baumgarten coming up. Talk to us about New York City, where apparently there's less killing going on than before. Later on, we got Jim Roop, Dennis Pitzenbarger. Don't go anywhere, ladies and gentlemen. It's the noon news hour.
I think tide turning, as I remember, I was raised in the desert, but tides kind of turn. It's easy to see a tide turn. Did I say those words? No question that the enemy has tried to spread sectarian violence. They use violence as a tool to do that. We need an energy bill that encourages consumption. Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we. We must never stop thinking about how best to defend our country. I'm the decider, and I decide what is best. The United States of America is engaged in a war against an extremist group of folks. Families is where our nation finds hope, where wings take dream. If you don't stand for anything, you don't stand for anything. If you don't stand for something, you don't stand for anything. Fool me once. Shame on them. Shame on you. You fool me, we can't get fooled again. In my speech to the nation, whatever you want to call it, at the high school level, and find out that the literacy level of our children are appalling. I hear there's rumors on the internets that we're going to have a draft. You're working hard to put food on your family. I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully. Tribal sovereignty means that. It's sovereign. You've been given sovereignty and you're viewed as a sovereign entity. Okay. And therefore, the relationship between the federal government and tribes is one between sovereign entities. They underestimated the compassion of our country. I think they misunderestimated the will and determination of the commander-in-chief, too. Too many OBGYNs aren't able to practice their...
All right. It's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. 503-733-2970. Are you going to accept it or deny it?
I don't know.
You can't deny every person who has a creepy MySpace profile. There'd be nobody left.
I'm not denying. I don't deny a lot of people. I just deny bands who have 10,000 friends.
So is it who? Okay, so bands. Who else will you deny on MySpace? What else will make you deny someone's friend request?
Like blatantly sexist or like homophobic remarks.
All right. Well, there was that guy. Who was that guy?
Or people who like if they want to be my friend and they say they're a fan of the show, but I look and all the other girls are like naked with, you know, everything hanging out.
Look at my ass. All right.
I don't want to be a part of. I don't want to be associated with that group of girls.
I don't want to be a party to any of that shenanigans. All right. It's 503-733-2970. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for coming along. We have Britney news coming up.
Ooh.
Oh, and apparently, and this thing, Viso is looking for a model. They're looking for Miss Viso. Miss Viso beverage or whatever. We'll get that. The news hour continues here, and it's just a skosh. Jim Roop coming up at the top of the hour. Later on, we have Dennis Pitzenbarger is going to be here from the Portland Tribune. Oh, and we have some classic Tim Riley sounders as well. Let's see. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from New York City.
New York City. Oh, yeah. New York City.
Once again, almost certainly not going to be killed on vacation. New York, Gary Baumgarten, how are you, sir?
That's right. In fact, I'm inviting you to come to New York City and we'll take a walk through Central Park at night.
Thank you, Gary. Do we have to link arms and sing show tunes together?
No, we don't have to do
you
that.
Sing something for the pajama game, perhaps?
That's a little over the top.
I'm just saying, you know, you are an attractive man, Gary. I got this from the FBI's violent crime statistics thing here. New York City is once again claiming the title of safest big city. Now, is this... let me ask you this. There's so many stereotypes and so many sort of cliches you hear about New York being a place where you go there and everybody gets shot at. Was that ever really true, or is that a thing that you all just got sort of unfairly labeled with?
No, I think it was fairly accurate. I mean, remember back to the film Fort Apache, the Bronx, guys that I know who worked up there in the police department said that was pretty accurate depiction of what was going on in that area when, you know, back in the day. So the city has really turned around. But here's what's really interesting about it, in my opinion. You know, when trends throughout the nation are going in one direction and you're riding along, so if the trend nationally is a decline in crime and you're riding along, well, yeah, you could take credit for it, but it's something that's happening across the nation. So you know, how much effect do your efforts have in keeping the crime down? But when the trend starts going in the other direction, there's an increase in crime elsewhere, but in New York City there's a decrease, then it causes you to legitimately step back and take a look at the efforts that are occurring here in New York City that are successfully bucking the trend. They have every right to crawl.
Let me ask you that. How much of this goes back to Giuliani coming into office some time ago? Because there was so much, and again, I don't pretend to know a whole lot about what goes on in New York City, but there was such a perception that Giuliani came in was just like cracking skulls left and right. I mean, is that accurate to say that it started with him?
That's an amazingly perceptive question to ask, actually, because
that's what I do.
There is a school of thought that says that when Giuliani initiated the crackdown on quality of life crime, it had a spiraling effect. Because if you're out there gambling on the street corner, for example, or drinking in public, maybe the next thing you do is you're going to jack a car or something. So now the cops are having contact with low-life, low-level criminals, and has a deterring effect against them going and graduating into doing other kinds of crime. That's one school of thought anyway. So it's interesting you should ask the question.
So then the question
are
is,
those who are giving Giuliani credit for what the residual that's going on now.
Because, I mean, before Giuliani's at Times Square was just like one big red light district, right? I mean, it was just like...
Right now it's more like Disneyland.
Yeah, there's nothing but booze and whores everywhere. Now, so the question is then where's the... I mean, I don't know if you know this or not, but what is the least safe... what is the most dangerous big city in America? If y'all are the safest, who's on the opposite end of the scale?
I actually haven't looked at that. That's a good question.
I'm guessing Baltimore. Baltimore is always sort of my go-to guess. Baltimore is always my go-to guess for cities.
Probably Washington, D.C., probably Detroit, where I'm from originally.
Yeah.
Pretty pathetic town.
Well, I mean,
Detroit, unfortunately.
I got to tell you, I don't know anybody who moved. I have several friends of mine. Many of my best friends are from Detroit. I don't know anybody who left Detroit and really pines for it. You know what? I know people from New York are like, oh, I got to get back there, or I loved living there. You know, maybe they go back, maybe they wouldn't, but they loved it. I don't know anybody who left Detroit and they're like, boy, every single day I wish I was back in Detroit. I can't wait to get back.
We miss our friends and we miss our family, but we don't miss the quality of life that unfortunately, the town has. Now, the suburbs are nice. There are a lot of nice suburbs around Detroit, but the city itself is really struggling to rebound. They're trying now, but it's difficult because they're in such a hole.
Yeah, a place just gets so beaten. You know, at a certain point, it's like a hole. It just becomes like one big Flint, Michigan, man. It's like, how do you dig yourself out of there? All right. Hey, let me ask you this. This is a side question. I was in Los Angeles a couple weeks ago, and I meant to stop in and say hello to Jim Roop at the CNN building, and then I didn't, and so forth. And it's a dumb question. My wife and I are talking about it later on in the year, going through New York for like a week or so. I don't know whether it's going to happen or not. But is there like a CNN headquarters in New York, or are you stashed in some other like larger nondescript building?
No, I'm in Time Warner Center.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's
very tell your wife. On the 10th floor, we have this amazing cafeteria with fresh food that's prepared right in front of your eyes, and you sit at a window overlooking Central Park. It's gorgeous.
Fantastic. Excellent. All right. So I'll make that a note to self, because we may be doing that in December or something. So I will. We'll come walk your way, my friend.
Excellent.
All right. Gary Baumgarten in America's safest big city, New York. We'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Later.
Okay, there you go. Gary Baumgarten, ladies and gentlemen, New York City. You know what I realized, again, just we were getting ready to pick him up, is we were having another MySpace conversation while we were sitting on hold. I never even thought about that. We're like, so there's women are showing their asses. Woo! And it's, and if you don't remember, he had that whole meltdown that one day about his daughter being on MySpace and how it was just nothing but perverts. And we were trying to tell him that wasn't the case. Like, no, it's a place where adults get together and exchange thoughts and ideas and share common interests and show their asses. And then, all right, it's 503-733-2970. Oh, did we miss this? Jesse, were you angling to speak with Gary Baumgarten?
Not really.
Okay. Here's why I say that. It says on the screen, Jesse wants to talk with Gary Baumgarten.
Oh, no. I was just letting you know. I moved from Miami, and I know like 2 years ago, we won for the most crime over New York.
We won. That's the best for us. See, right there. See, this is the sort of question I couldn't ask Gary Baumgarten, because it's not that he has no sense of humor. But but people from New York have a very, it's a very specific sense of humor. And so if you don't hit it exactly, it just is a disaster.
They analyze themselves too much. They, like, got to watch every word they say.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I was going to ask him if New York ever took any pride in the fact that you were probably going to be shot at some point if you vacationed there for more than a month. So when is it that Miami, quote, when did you guys win for having the most crime? When was that?
It was 2 years ago. I don't know who has it now, but things haven't changed much there.
Is this, it's sort of like a belt that travels around the country to whatever city's at the top of the heap?
Yeah. No. Okay. I don't know. I moved to Portland, and I don't. These meth heads here are like much worse than the people that shoot you in Miami.
Really? It's why do people? If it's not. Let me ask you this. Here there's a lot of meth, or so they say. Why are people most likely to shoot you? If you get shot in Miami, why is it? What's the reason behind most of the shootings in Miami?
You're wearing the wrong colors. I don't know. Like, a lot of Cubans move there, like, every month, and most of them are the criminals from Cuba. They send them there.
It's just like in Scarface.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Thank you, Jesse.
Yeah.
All right, there you go. All right, there you go. That's you. Peace, and I'm out. All right, Jesse. Gold. All right, kids. Tim Riley's at the city desk.
Well, it looks like Anna Nicole Smith may be cashing in on the death of her son.
No, I'm shocked. I'm not that shocked.
Reps for the 38-year-old Smith and her photo agent, Getty Images, have received more than $600,000 of the rights to snapshots of her late son, Daniel. The lad posed with his mom and new sister at the maternity ward the night before he was found slumped over and dead. In Touch magazine paid as much as $400,000 for the print exclusive.
That
on
was
the
pretty.
Photo.
That's less than a week turnaround. That's pretty fast, especially someone who apparently has no memory of the incident or crime. And it seems like now, when are these taken? When were
this is like the night before.
The night before.
Entertainment Tonight and the Insider forked over an estimated $250,000 for the TV exclusive on those.
See, that's just dumb, though. Why would you? Who cares? The photographs of his. Are these the last known photographs or whatever of him alive?
Yeah. Well, these were taken by freelance photographer Larry Burkhead, who claims to be the father of the newborn, reportedly named Hannah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's all very confusing.
So that's that.
All right. Let's see. It's 503-733-2970. Let's see. Something about the fat women in France. All right. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, Johnny Depp loved wearing women's clothing. Apparently so much that he continued wearing female clothing after he filmed Ed Wood.
It makes me feel closer to them.
Filmmakers, including the movie's director Tim Burton, worry the actor was in danger of being attacked as an easy target because of his clothing preference. The claims are being made by author Nigel Goodall's new tell-all book called The Secret World of Johnny Depp.
Well, golly, I just love women.
That's kind of hot.
What? I'm sorry?
Seeing Johnny Depp parade around in, like, lacy panties.
See, I will never... Okay. I will never, but see, that's because it's Johnny Depp.
It is, it's because
like if it,
it
was,
is Johnny
if it was
Depp.
Scotty parading around. Else. Scotty, come in here and parade around in lacy panties. Do it now. If it was just some schlub, like if it was Nate, you wouldn't. You're fine. Let me ask you this, Sarah.
No, I can't
tell
you no.
Would you find it sexy if Nate was strutting around in lacy underthings?
Not really.
So is it because Johnny Depp?
Well, because he.
Is it because he's so good looking, or is it because I can acknowledge that we've talked about it before that you know I acknowledge he's a good looking man, perhaps the best looking man ever, or is it because he is good looking in a sort of feminine way?
Yeah, well, it's because he's kind of androgynous, like, you know.
Let me go. I'm going to run through a list of male celebrities. You tell me whether, or just men. You tell me whether
or not they look good in panties.
Whether or not it would be arousing to you in some way to see them parading around in lacy underwear.
Okay.
Okay. Ready?
Uh-huh.
Clyde.
No.
See, I wanted to start with sort of an act.
I have my eyes. I'm picturing
like
them all as you go.
Swinging
through.
Three bats in the on deck circle.
Please erase that image. Please erase that image.
Matthew McConaughey.
No.
Tom Hanks.
What's wrong with you?
I'm trying
this
to think
the
of
dumbest
who.
Game ever.
Ethan Hawke. Orlando Bloom. The not fat twin from Good Charlotte.
I don't know.
How about that guy from NoFX that you're all hot for?
From NoFX?
Or was that guy? Who's that guy? The punk guy that was in the studio that one time over at Intercom.
Oh, from Alkaline Trio.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so if he... So if,
well, because he also has that thing where he wears a lot of makeup and, you know, he had a lot of eyeliner on.
Lucas
He's a really
Rossi.
Pretty man. Oh, he could totally pull that off.
All right, okay. Just checking.
Okay.
All right. These are, see, I, the female, this is like that How Chicks Think segment we used to do. The female mind is just endlessly fascinating to guys, I think. It's just, it's so...
It's bizarre just when I think I understand it. I'm like, ooh, Johnny Depp in lace panties.
But see, but
I,
Nate,
I didn't think I'd like that.
But Nate, your Nate is not androgynous in any way. He's all male. And so there's just no way. So I can see why that would not be the case. All right. No, because but it works the other way, too. I've talked about, and we've had this discussion on the show, that chicks in some male clothing are very hot. Like a chicken, like a white button down, that's hot. A chick, you know what else is hot? And Kevin Smith talks about chicks in hockey jerseys. You know what else? A chick in boxer shorts. That's kind of hot in a strange way. Because it implies that she's probably spent the night at your house.
Ladies?
No, that's just weird. No. Have you seen,
oh, heaven forbid.
Let me ask you this. Okay, have you seen that photograph? And it's from a MySpace page. And it's going around the internet. And you can tell, I don't think it's been photoshopped. I mean, who can tell these days? But it was from some... it was for me like a personals ad or a MySpace page or something, and it was like a whole lot of, and it was some woman who put a picture of herself up, and it was like, I'm a, you know, one of those girls who's too good to be true. I'm a slut who loves a good time, you know, dumb guys. And it's like her riding a, like a mechanical bull or something at some one of those bars, like one of those Dixie Tavern type bars.
Uh-huh.
And so it's some big-breasted slut riding a bull, but she's got like Daisy Dukes on, and it's. And so she's got these huge bosoms, barely contained by this, like, white, like a wife beater. And then these Daisy Dukes, and you're, like, thinking, oh, hot slut. And then it's just at the right angle. You can see right up one of the pant legs. There's the junk. And by junk, I mean penis.
Really?
Totally. You can see the male member. I don't think you're, I mean, really, you have to be looking for it. But once you know what to look for, it's right there. Right there for all to see. Here's Tim Riley.
Tara Reid just got another boob job to make her breasts smaller.
Oh.
The American Pie actress checked into a Beverly Hills clinic to have her first set of implants replaced by a smaller one.
That's no good. Why
she also allegedly had some cosmetic surgery carried out on her stomach to remove some unsightly marks caused by an earlier liposuction procedure.
Have you seen her ripply weird stomach?
No.
Oh,
can I tell
God,
you how much I
awful.
Love this show and everything about it? This really is the greatest radio show that's ever existed. This is just fantastic.
Her stomach looks like it's made of silly putty and somebody like kind of...
And somebody used it to Xerox a Popeye
someone
comic.
Someone kind of hit it a couple times down around her belly button.
I don't even know what that means. You mean it like it's indented?
Yeah, it's all like, it's bizarre. It is the weirdest looking thing. It's ripply.
So is it like clay that someone has pushed their fingers into?
Yeah, it's
into?
Like clay that someone's kind of pushed their hands on. And it has like
that's
weird
not from
ripple.
Liposuction, though, is it? I thought liposuction was, I should rephrase this. I thought liposuction, they inserted the tube through the buttocks. I thought that's what it was. Have you, let me ask you this.
I think that's a colon cleansing.
Well, or never mind.
No, Nick.
A night with Clay Aiken. hi, bada bing. Oh, wait, that absolutely, really, that's a... I'm sorry?
Oh, that's no good.
Yeah, it's
all
ridgy.
That looks like she's smuggling a series of ballpoint pens under her flesh. That's what that looks like, just right under the epidermis.
Looks like a banana bread ready to be taken out of the oven.
I don't even know what I was talking about. Oh, but here's the thing with liposuction. Welcome to the lunch hour, by the way. Have you ever seen them performing liposuction? Because I have.
Not live, no.
Well, not like in person, but on the Discovery Channel.
Oh.
Like, you know, it's like a... Have you ever done that thing you flip by? And guys know what I'm talking about here. Have you ever done this? Where you will see a close-up of part of the human body, engage or whatever, and you have to look for a few minutes to try, or, you know, at least for a second or two, to figure out whether you're looking at a, you know, a sexy part of the body or not. Like, you can't tell. Like, you're like, maybe it's a butt, maybe it's an armpit. And you can't really tell. And you'll have to look for it. This, there's a great webpage I went to one point. It was called butt or boobs. And it was like a picture. And it was like, it was just a very, very, very close-up picture of the cleavage area. And it was like, can you tell the difference between the two? But sometimes that'll happen on the Discovery Channel. You'll flip by and you're like, oh, is this something sexy? Oh, God, no. They're taking out a guy's eye, you know, or whatever. And it's some close-up of the body that seems alluring until you figure out what it is. I have seen on the Discovery Channel them doing liposuction. God damn, is that unpleasant. Okay, I want you to imagine this now.
Rick.
Picture a meat thermometer, but it's about 5 feet long. Hello, can you hear me? It's okay, I'm done. But it's like a meat thermometer.
Oh, God.
Seriously, and it's about, it's between 2 and 3 feet long.
Okay, and then they kind of...
I would say it's the circumference of a garden hose. And then they insert it underneath your skin.
Don't they root it around?
Have you ever used one of those carpet rakers? Where you just sort of
is it like one of those siphoning hoses?
Exactly. It's sort of like you're skimming the leaves off a pool, but the leaves are running away from you really quickly with a lot of force, and so you have to really actively go after them time and again. That's what it's like. My point is, if I was going to get liposuction, I would know not to have it done on that part of my body, especially if I was Tara Reid and had a propensity for taking my shirt off all the time and making a mentally enfeebled sexual face. All right, here's...
Well, the good part is Tom Snyder's Tomorrow Show is coming up on the 2-DVD set September 26th.
Tomorrow, now, is that the one he did back in the 70s?
Yeah, it's the one that used to be on After Letterman.
Good times. I've seen a couple of those, like, in... Where did I see those in reruns? They ran that...
Well, guests include Timothy Leary, Ken Kesey, Tom Wolfe, and the Grateful Dead.
Ah, fantastic. You know, Tom Snyder, man, he's not even on anymore, is he?
No, he gave up. He said he had nothing else to say to anybody in return.
That's a little joke
for Charlie the cameraman.
That's one of the only impressions I can do. And you know, the thing is, it's not any good. It's bad. And I forgot I could do it until just now. I just remember she said Tom Snyder. And then, like, showing this huge white horse teeth of his. And I'm like, okay. And then he'd go to a break. And then he was always enveloped in a cloud of cigarette smoke. All right. They need to bring back smoking on television. That'd look cool.
I don't think we should be smoking on TV.
That was the thing in Hollywoodland. All it did was make me want to smoke the entire time.
Man, good night and good luck. Boy, you want to talk about some smoking? That movie, so, Good Night and Good Luck, is like smoking porn.
You can bet all those guys were dead by the mid-60s.
Oh, they were.
Romero was.
No, they were. I read an article about that, actually. They were talking about Good Night and Good Luck and how everybody smokes, and they did like a chart of like who died when of what, and it was like 80% of them lung cancer, heart disease, thrombosis, or whatever.
As were all the guys who covered the atomic bomb test for TV in the 50s, all dead.
And everybody who worked on the John Wayne film, The Conqueror, which was filmed on the, what is that, the Yucatan Flats, or whatever the hell
some
it is.
Some place in Utah.
That place where they were setting off the atomic bombs. Mm-hmm. They had this great idea in the 50s, and by great, I mean terrible. They did this atomic testing. Let's film a movie here. Duke, you know. And then, you know, John Wayne and Agnes Moorehead were in that. They all died. All of them died of cancer. So, but I'm telling you, I'm not telling you to smoke, kids, because it's wrong. Don't do it.
Only if you're a high school athlete.
We'll just pretend we don't notice it. Oh, man, you don't even want to know about that. I wanted to see kind of the arc of this story about what's his name, Luke Glenn. Just sample cover. I believe this is a letter to the editor, but I'm entirely... Oh, yes, this is from Dennis Doyle of Redland.
Mm-hmm.
We were aghast to learn of the killing this weekend of Tigard area teen Lucas Glenn. Something went terribly wrong here. Having raised 3 children... Wait, listen to this. Listen to the denial. They were talking about, by the way, Luke Glenn, who was drunk, holding a knife, charging into his parents' house while out of control after having been beanbagged by the cops, having refused to drop the knife and having, quote, said, I'm not going down without killing someone. They say, having raised 3 children, We know there are occasions when children can be defiant.
It's like he...
mischievous. It's like he... really.
Those little rascals.
Oh, he's a handful, that Lucas. What with his killing and so forth.
He just needs a little more love.
What with his, you're all gonna die, 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 and I will bathe in your blood. It's like he wouldn't... It's like he wouldn't go to bed early or something. Let's see.
Every so often, you got to bring out the dunce cap again. Keep them in line.
And by dunce cap, we mean bullets. Our sympathies go out to the parents who raised such a promising young man, and who just needed, this is so horrible, who just needed a little extra help getting through, wait for it, these adolescent growing pains.
I remember this one time when I was chasing my mom with a knife. She set me down for a good pep talk.
Oh,
all
boy.
Better.
I went to dinner. I went to bed hungry that night, I can tell you. Oh.
What they need is more hobbies.
Midnight basketball.
More sports.
Seriously. Foosball.
So did he know? Oh. So this guy obviously knew the family then, right? Did he know the kid or is he just...
No. Good on hell no. He's just some nitwit. Jesus. Oh, and he was smashing car windows all the way down the street, too. Yeah, those darn kids. They're silly.
Like smashing pumpkins.
Those little ruffians with their silly death games. All right. Jim Roop is calling way early today. Well, should we take him now?
Sure.
Yeah.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show live from Los Angeles. How are you, sir?
Am I early? I was told 1 o'clock.
No, it's fine. It doesn't matter.
I can call back.
No, it's right.
He's only 1 minute early.
It's cool in the gang, brother. Doesn't matter. How are you doing, my friend?
Well, all right, thanks.
That's okay. No. You are welcome to call. You're welcome to call early. You're welcome. You have carte blanche, my friend. You may call. Hey, Lisa Goddard got Orrin Hatch to talk like a pirate today.
You've got to be kidding.
No, I have the audio. Orrin Hatch, John McCain, and somebody else whose name escapes me. If she could get Barney Frank to say, "Avast ye mateys." But she played me audio. It sounded like she was in a studio. Let me ask you this. When you're on the phone with us, are you really just on the phone, or are you at a studio usually?
I'm in a studio.
In other words, are you speaking to us over a phone channel on the board, or is it just like literally a cell phone?
No, it's a phone channel on the board at this point.
Ah, excellent. Yeah, right. She was on the soundboard, and she played us some audio of John McCain saying, "Yar." And then she played us, I think it was Orrin Hatch, and he was saying something like, you know, yo-ho-ho in a bottle of rum. Which is especially amusing when it's Orrin Hatch who doesn't drink rum at all at any time ever or have fun.
You sure that wasn't Juliano doing
the voices? No, it is National Talk Like a Pirate Day.
Yeah, well, I know that.
And Lisa Goddard, you know what it is? She's a fast-thinking woman about town who goes the extra mile to gather the news.
She does.
She really does.
That's why she's the Capitol Hill correspondent.
That's what I'm saying. I also get a disproportionate amount of email from people who are interested in the footwear that she has on a daily basis. And you'll note that I have the good taste and courtesy and tact not to pass those questions on to her. So in case anybody should ask.
I would like to meet her one day. I really would.
You know, we should all get together and just have a big...
A welcome Lisa Goddard Day.
Yes, or something like that.
Yeah.
Really, because Tim and I have talked about this a lot. Tim Riley and I have lamented that we were not part of the golden age of the hard-boiled journalists, you know, where it's like, you do the news with Murrow and, you know, Cronkite, and then you go, you know, belt down some booze at Elaine's.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, I that whole golden age, and it was all brought back to me when I was watching Studio 60 last night, that new Aaron Sorkin show, which is so obviously a throwback to the movie Network, which I love. And Network itself is a throwback to those golden ages, the golden age of newscasting. And I just, I don't have anything like that. So what we got to do is some sort of an event where it's, you know, it's all of us, and then it's all y'all. It's like you and McCarthy, and, you know, and then Gary Baumgart can get drunk and yell about something. He can get drunk and go, "Goddamn kids," you know, and then break something. And we can all cower in fear.
You know, we could get him arrested. That would be fun.
Gary, you know,
yeah.
I got to tell you, man, you know, we love Gary Baumgarten here. We really do. But you get with some guys, you say like, well, you know, he speaks softly, but he carries a big stick. Or like Sarah and I will talk about this. Sarah and I have some friends where we will say, well, you know, it's a, you know, he's very low key and doesn't get angry. But of course, those are the ones you got to watch out for. Here's the thing about Gary. He gets angry all the time and you still have to watch out for him. Because
yeah.
At any moment, he's like 10 seconds away from just a total meltdown about something. Which is fantastic, which is what makes him so great. He is very New York. So.
Oh, yeah, he is definitely New York.
It's
but you know, he grew up in Detroit, though.
He did. We were just talking about that. We were well, because New York apparently is now the safest big city in America.
Well, because Baumgartner lives there.
Because he'll beat your ass. Because he'll friggin' kill you.
That's right.
Because he's like Charles Bronson out there with a sock full of quarters. Where is L.A. ranked, by the way? Is L.A. a safe place?
We're third, I think, in that list.
Really? Who's... See, and I mean, it's like you just hear... I guess it's because... You know what it is? Here's the thing. It's because you get a certain image from a certain time, and it just sticks in your head forever.
So you know, this is the safest big city. This is not safest cities on a blanket.
But that's like per capita.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, because safest city, period, would be like some, you know, rust bucket where there's like five people. But like L.A. has gotten tagged forever now because there was that spate of freeway shootings in like 95 or whenever it was.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if those still continue. Maybe we're just not told about them anymore. But that's the thing that everybody still thinks of.
Well, there's still freeway shootings. It's just, you know, it's like trash day anymore.
It's just, it's old hat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently there's one crime per 25.97 residents here in L.A.
Well, that's not so bad.
So you're the 26th guy.
No, seriously. No, it's not so bad. I got to tell you, and I told him that last weekend, I stayed at a hostel in Inglewood, and you know what? I got it in one piece, my friend.
Only because you never emerged from the room.
No, that is true. I went in, and there were three bolts on the door, and I closed them all.
Yeah.
I locked all of them, and there were bars on the window. And
you didn't walk the hood and say hey to the peeps? Nothing like that?
No, I don't really have peeps, but I didn't try to make any either, no. And it's funny because it was exactly, even with a GPS, we actually got lost at one point because we put in, like, boulevard instead of street or something. And so we were trying to return, and our car rental was, like, deep in the heart of Inglewood. And so we're driving along, and unbeknownst to me, this is partially what contributed to us missing the plane and having to stay there overnight. I had put in street, not boulevard, or vice versa, blah, blah, blah. We can't find the car rental place. And we're just driving deeper and deeper in, and my wife at some point makes an observation about there. Well, there sure are a lot of pawn shops around here, you know? I mean, that's it, man. It's like when Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, you go, well, there, you'll note by the prevalence of pink orchids that we have entered the, you know, whatever zone of, like, you know, the Serengeti or something. You see, so it is like here. It's like you see a lot of strip clubs, you know you're in Portland. You know what I mean? So you can judge, you know, and you see a lot of check cashing places, you know you're in my neighborhood. And so we're driving and we're like, where are we supposed to be returning the car to? And it's like, and you're seeing more and more streetlights that have burned out, not been replaced, you know. So it's a good time. Hey, let's talk about tainted spinach.
Oh, yeah.
I only mention this because my wife and I, up until about a week ago, ate this by the pound, which apparently now you're not going to be doing for some time because it's what, like 21 states, 25 states?
21 states that I know of, about 114 people, one death so far.
Now, see, what I read about this, maybe you know this or not, I read that this is actually nothing they can solve by just washing it, which is usually
right.
The case.
Well, because they don't know. There's several ways. I mean, it's a heck of a journey from the field to the grocery store, you know.
Right.
And there's several ways that food can get contaminated with this particular, with any leafy vegetable or any kind of plant. If there's contamination of the root that gets into the leaf itself, which now you have to cook it to get rid of that bacteria, and even that doesn't always work.
All right, and so this is it. But, I mean, dumb question. How are we going to know when it's... I guess they can just test it. Test it all the way, but, I mean, do they even know where it came from?
No, that's the first thing they have to do, is find out where that is and then deal with the conditions from there.
Yeah.
They, you know, it's so widespread. The only thing they can rule out is tampering, because you can't...
You can't really tamper with spinach.
No, not in 21 different states. You know,
that's a really ambitious tamperer.
Yeah, that's an Al Qaeda type of thing. You got people planted everywhere.
Yes,
you know. You pee on that leaf, I'll go over to Oregon and pee on that leaf. I mean, that's the kind of thing that it is. So it's gonna have to, you know, and there's no organization like that, I don't. At least not that I know of.
No, but I mean, see, now you're not Jim Roop. Now you're just giving terrorists ideas.
I'm sorry,
Jim Roop. Why do you
don't poop on my lettuce?
What? Why do you hate America, Jim Roop? Oh God. All right. Well,
I'm a meat eater, so I don't care.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, and
I eat salads too. Don't get me wrong.
As somebody once said, you know what? In the end, cancer and garbage disposals will get us all. The world is shot to hell. We're all goners. What are you gonna do? You know, really? I mean, you just can't worry about it. And as far as I'm not saying E. coli is a walk in the park.
No.
But I asked my wife's a nurse, and I asked her about this. I said, "What about this E. coli business?" And she actually said that really, I mean, if it just never occurs to you to drink any water, it'll kill you. Because that's really what it is. It's a dehydrating kind of death. And because it's, you know, it's kind of a coming out both ends.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah. Kind of an all exit open.
Yeah, I got you.
So, you know, just, you know, stay near the sink and have a glass handy.
You know.
So. There you go. There's medical czar. There's health czar. Surgeon General Rick Emerson.
I'm going to keep a bucket with me for the rest of the month.
That's
that's all I'm saying.
A bucket and some Jack Daniels.
There you go.
You'll be fine. One way or the other.
Anything.
It'll all work itself out.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay. I have nothing else to say. All right, Jim Roop, don't take any wooden nickels, my friend. Thank you, brother. We'll talk to you soon. There you go. Jim Roop, ladies and gentlemen, Los Angeles. God, I love that guy. All right. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Oh, by the way, be happy to know that Luke Glenn, All-American Golden Boy, who was apparently trying to kill his family with a knife when they shot him, was working for the Oregon Liquor Control Commission on his spare time. What a banner year they're having. Okay, there you go. It's all part of life's rich pageant, isn't it, kids? Take a break here. Oh, we'll come back. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. What the hell? We got Dennis Pitsenbarger coming up and all that. You say there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. I'm back on that news. I don't.